and welcome to the MBOM podcast, where you'll learn to master the business of yoga. MBOM is a proud part of the Wander Barn podcast network, and I'm your host, Amanda Kingsmith. I'm a 500-hour registered yoga teacher, a yoga business coach, and a total business geek. Here at MBOM, you'll learn everything you need to know to create a sustainable yoga business by learning from myself and guests from around the world about how they built their yoga businesses. And about how you too can become a successful yoga teacher, studio owner, and much more. All right, let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the MBOM podcast. I am super excited that you're here with me today for this episode of the show. And as always, I'm super grateful that you're joining me for the podcast. I know that there's lots of podcasts out there that you can choose from and lots of yoga podcasts to choose from. So really appreciate that you have chosen to tune in with me here today for this episode. I'm super excited for today's guest and for this episode of the show. But before we get there, I wanted to give a little shout out to the sponsor for this week's episode, Offering Tree. You guys have heard me talk about Offering Tree quite a bit, but if you're new to the show or maybe new to Offering Tree or maybe in search of a platform to host your website and your yoga business, then this might be the perfect time to hear a little bit more about them. Offering Tree is really a one-stop shop for all things yoga business, from your website, like I said, to your email marketing, to your class schedule, to payments, memberships, courses, and so much more. I'm going to tell you more about them and what the cool things that they're up to a little bit later on. But if you want to check them out and get a little discount, head on over to offeringtree.com/MBOM. And today on the podcast, I am super excited to be joined by Annie Dunhoff. Annie is the founder of Inga Unite, English teacher, yoga teacher, and teacher trainer for yogis who want to build an international career in the world of yoga and wellness. At Inga, she helps non-native English speaking yoga teachers build confidence, find their voice, develop language, communication, teaching, and business skills to build a solid foundation for a sustainable and long-lasting career. It's her mission to help multilingual yogis fill the gaps in skills, knowledge, and experience by providing continuing education and help overcome the obstacles that hold them back from thriving in the career that they most desire. And in this episode, Annie shares how she blended her passion for English teaching with her passion for yoga to create Inga Unite, how to build confidence and hone your voice as an English second language yoga teacher, or just as a yoga teacher teaching in any second language in general. She talks about business lessons that she's learned through her career and so much more. So this episode is really jam-packed with a lot of goodness. And for a lot of you, you know, maybe you are a native English speaker, maybe you teach in that language and you're not super excited or interested in learning another language, I still think there's a lot that can be taken away from this episode of the show because, you know, as a culture, as a community, as a world, we are all very different. We have different backgrounds, we have different belief systems, and we speak different languages. And I truly think one of the things I've learned through my time on this earth and through my travels, especially, is that language is a way that connects us. And for me, it's been so empowering and enriching to learn a second language and be able to connect deeper with another culture. And I talk a lot about in this episode my experiences learning Spanish and learning how to teach yoga in Spanish. So if you're somebody who thinks that they might want to learn another language, maybe teach in another language, travel more, or you just want to support other people who don't speak English as a first language, this is a really great episode for you. Language learning is near and dear to my heart, and this is just an amazing business, an amazing cause. And so let's get into it. Without further ado, here's Annie. Welcome to the podcast today, Annie. I'm really excited to have you here with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited about this chat as well.
Yeah, I think this is going to be really great. I'm super passionate about language learning and, you know, second languages and English and yoga, all the things. So I think that this will be a fun convo. But before we get into it, can you tell me where you're joining me from today?
Absolutely. Good question, actually. I'm in Morocco at the moment. I've been here for a couple of weeks now. Went on a yoga retreat and actually really liked the place that I was staying and decided to stay for a bit longer. So from the south of Morocco.
Oh, amazing. I've only been to Morocco one time and I just crossed into Tangier and I think that I really need to get back there.
Yeah. It's a really nice place. And especially because most of the year I'm in the Netherlands at the moment. And the weather difference is just huge. And I really like being in the sun and close to the beach. So it's a nice place to spend the winter.
Oh, sounds amazing. Well, I'm excited that you have that opportunity and I'm excited to dive in with you. I'm curious if we can start by, you can share a little bit about your yoga story, how you got into yoga and all of that good stuff.
Absolutely. Right. Well, started a while ago, can't remember exactly the year, but started practicing yoga while I was traveling. And at some point, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I wanted to keep traveling, but didn't want to work in bars anymore. I was working as a barista and in coffee cafes and stuff like that. I wanted to do something else. And I really loved yoga. And I thought maybe I should do something with that, because that's something that you can do from wherever in the world you are. And there's always people that want to practice. But then I thought maybe it's not as safe as doing something like teaching English, which I also really loved. So basically around the same time, I became an English teacher and a yoga teacher, and realized that the people that I taught in my English classes couldn't really keep up with the classes that we did, like the yoga classes that we did. They didn't really understand what was going on. So decided to write a English for yoga course. And to that course, we only had English yoga teachers joining that wanted to learn English, and completely changed everything. So then Enga Unite was created, or was born, and we now offer English education for yoga teachers.
Oh, that's so cool. Do you know what's so interesting about this is I did a podcast episode, it must have been about a year ago now, with a guy who he's British, but he lives in Colombia and he runs programs in Spanish. And I actually did one of his programs to learn how to teach yoga in Spanish. And I feel like it's really cool because it's kind of like the same sort of concept, but with a different language, which is really cool. And I love the idea of like learning language through teaching a skill. If that makes
Absolutely.
Sense.
Absolutely. I would really love to know more about this person. So please, if you could bring us in and like put us in touch, that would be amazing, because it's such a skill to have, and especially for people that are traveling or people that live in other countries or just want to connect with people from other countries. Language and communications is so important. And especially in the yoga room, what we learn in a general language class or in general conversation, when we spend time with people in a hostel or in whatever tour you're doing, the language we use is so different than what we use in the yoga environment. So being able to teach in a language is often something that can be really challenging, but it's doable and such a skill to have indeed. Really great way to connect with more and more people around the world.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like I kind of think about language learning as like you kind of obviously you hit different levels. But when I say levels, I don't mean like, oh, you're a beginner and then you're intermediate, then you're advanced. I feel like it's more like things that you use the language for constantly come first. Like for me, I had said like, you know, for a while with my Spanish, it was like, oh, you know, I speak like conversational Spanish, but I'm like fluent in restaurants, you know, like going to restaurants was something I can read menus, I can talk to waiters. But, you know, there was this whole realm of topics that was really hard for me. And I could go to a yoga class and I could follow along and stuff like that. And part of that was because I'd been practicing and teaching for so long, but there were so many words that I didn't actually understand in terms of body parts or like the directional cues and stuff like that. So it was really cool to take a course and learn that. And then, you know, another level for my language learning with Spanish was I had a baby in Mexico earlier this year. And so we did almost all of our, you know, prenatal care, and then also, you know, everything with our pediatrician in Spanish. And so it was like, okay, I got to learn all these words that I never would have learned had that not happened, right? Because I just would never have used those types of languages. So it's kind of like we can learn in these different phases based on what we're doing. And I think if you're passionate about yoga and you love yoga, you love to teach yoga, I think it's such an amazing opportunity to learn to teach in a second language, and especially in a language like English that's like so universally spoken.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. It's interesting that, you know, when you go to a general language class, they prepare us to do really well in exams, and you've got really good, really great knowledge, maybe about grammar, certain vocabulary, even vocabulary practices to do really well in these testing environments. But when you use the language in your daily life, in real life situations, and like you said, maybe ordering at a restaurant or having a baby, the language becomes so different. And it's a shame that in language classes, we're so focused on these really basic things that we will never really use and don't really prepare us for the things that we want to use or come across in our day-to-day life, or especially if you live in another country, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, 100%. And so I'm curious if we can talk a little bit about your language learning journey. You know, did you learn English from a young age? Were you exposed to, I'm assuming like growing up in the Netherlands, you were exposed to like many languages like most Europeans are, but can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. So I grew up speaking and learning Dutch, and we do learn English, German, French, some people as well Spanish from a young age, but it's very basic, like I said, very focused on exam preparation and doing well in those testing environments. And then I knew a little bit, I knew the basics, especially in terms of English, French and German. And my first boyfriend, he was Australian, and I remember meeting him and feeling so unconfident speaking to him and using Google Translate all the time, or not feeling like I could actually express myself in a way that I would in Dutch. But it really helped me because I was kind of forced to learn, and I was kind of forced to find my voice and find the words and the expressions that I really wanted to make myself understood. And from there, I started traveling, improve my English by the day, because I was hanging out with a lot of people that were English native speakers, but also traveling in English speaking countries. And then from there, did exactly the same thing in Spanish. I really wanted to learn Spanish and started traveling around Spanish speaking countries and hanging out with Spanish speakers. And I think those kind of learning environments, just real life situations, speaking to the people that actually speak that language, practicing yoga in those languages as well, and speaking about topics related to yoga, that if you don't have an opportunity to speak or express yourself in your first language, and you're really forced or pushed to do that in another language, I believe that's the fastest and also the most effective way to learn, because in those situations, you're practicing the things that you actually need and actually want to use. And that's what it's been like for me as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I think that that's really awesome that you were able to go through that process and, you know, become not only fluent in two languages, but three. And it sounds like you learned probably even more. It's one thing, like I'm from Canada originally, and we do learn French when we're little, but I lived in the West and like not a lot of people speak French in the West. So it's not something I use day to day. So I kind of lost it all. And then, you know, it's so easy as a native English speaker to just travel around the world because it's kind of this common language that people will speak. I remember when I was traveling when I was younger in hostels, and, you know, we'd have people from Canada, US, Australia, Germany, Switzerland, Netherlands, and it's like everyone's common language is English. And it kind of means that you don't necessarily have to learn another language, which is not the greatest thing, I think, for us native English speakers, because we don't always have the motivation or feel the necessity to learn. But I think for a lot of other people, you know, they feel maybe if you're from a small country, if you speak a non-common language, it's, you know, a lot of the opportunity for jobs and that type of thing happens in English. And so they want to learn that, which I think is really where like what you do comes into play. So before we get kind of into the heart of what you do and that type of thing, I'm curious. So you said that in your journey, you were, you know, thinking, okay, I love yoga, I want to teach yoga, but maybe this isn't like a super practical kind of safe route in terms of income and revenue. So I'll teach English as well. Mm-hmm. Were you teaching like at schools? Were you teaching online? What was your English teaching kind of looking like at that point before you started the business?
Great question. I did an English certificate or an English teaching certificate in Edinburgh in Scotland. And straight after I finished that, they offered me a job at that school, same school. So I stayed and stayed at the school, stayed in Edinburgh for a couple of years. And I was teaching at that time at two different ones, teaching English to adults and teenagers, focused on like Scottish and British culture, but also business. It was a very wide variety of topics and different things I was teaching there, but really great experience. And in the meantime, did my yoga certificate, my yoga teacher certificate as well, and realized now I really want to somehow combine this, teach yoga and teach English. And suddenly it just became, you know, sometimes you sit down and you think, you create a plan of all the things that you want to do. And this kind of happened. And started teaching my English students, started teaching the students I had in class or the schools in Edinburgh yoga as well, and just developed from there.
All right, friends, we're just taking a quick break from the podcast to talk a little bit about Offering Tree. You guys have heard me talk about Offering Tree so much on the show, and that's because I truly love their business. And one of the things that I really love about Offering Tree for yoga teachers is that you can scale your business. You can create engaging digital content, video libraries, courses, challenges, and coaching programs that can meet your clients and students anywhere at any time. You can also plug seamlessly into your membership and packages to offer added value to your loyal clients. At any point, you can go from just offering classes to also offering courses, coaching, one-on-one privates, memberships, and so much more. And all of that is easy to do in one place. You don't have to look for other software, you don't have to pay other pricing plans, and so much more. Plus, with templates and integrated website features, it's super easy to get everything you need for all of this stuff up and running and launched before you know it. So now when you have an idea for a new program or a new workshop or something like starting a membership, you can just make it happen with their services. So if this sounds interesting to you, head on over to offeringtree.com/MBOM. You can do a free trial here or get a discount for listening to the show. Once again, offeringtree.com/MBOM. All right, now back to the episode.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And I'm curious if you can kind of walk us through, you know, what things look like in terms of your business. So say, you know, somebody, I'm in Mexico right now. So let's say somebody from Mexico who maybe has some basic English, who is keen to maybe go to the US and teach yoga or find clients online or offer a platform in English, but their English isn't really at the point where like they could teach confidently. If they find your business, kind of like, what does that process look like for them to learn?
Yeah, great question. It's funny because I actually did the first English for Yoga course in Mexico. I really was keen on helping people in Mexico because of the students I had before and all the teachers signing up to the general English for Yoga class. But basically what it looks like right now is that they are teachers that have done yoga teacher certificate. They have a certificate already, or they maybe finish it right now. They do it in another language. And the first thing we offer there is to find your voice in English. And I think for many yoga teachers, finding your voice is a real challenge because you speak about things that maybe you won't speak about as much on a daily basis or with your friends or family. So speaking about topics that maybe you're less familiar with or don't speak about as often, and especially doing that in another language, can be a big challenge. And that's what we start with, like defining your values, your boundaries, the things and the aspects of yoga and the philosophy that you want to include in your classes. And just having loads of conversational practice to make that language your own and to feel confident speaking about these different concepts on a conversational level. And from there, teaching practices. So we've got weekly conversation and teaching practices for people that are enrolled with us on a membership, but also on our longer, it's a 4-month program, English for Yoga Teachers course. And there we practice different asana blocks so that they can really practice the language that we use in asana classes, making use of different cueing formulas, teaching techniques, but the communication, the language and communication that we use in class to make your approach more accessible, more inclusive, understanding connotations and associations that people have with certain words, outdated language, because there's a lot of cues that maybe are not so effective or thoughtful in a yoga class anymore. So we really look at all the communication and language that comes that we use in a yogic environment. So that's in an asana class, but also mindfulness practices, meditation, and beyond. So how you welcome people into the class, how you set an intention, what we do during savasana. Literally at any point that we speak or communicate, verbal or non-verbally, we look at in more detail, depending on, I wouldn't say the level, but more the familiarity people have with the practice and with the students and the cultures that they are teaching to.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I think that that's all really amazing. And I was just thinking back to the course that I did in Spanish and just remembering how, you know, it's hard to direct people in a second language, like much less add in those other little things that I think when you're in your like native tongue or a language that you're fluent in come so simply. Like, you know, it's one thing to be like, you know, like inhale your arms up, exhale, fold forward. You know, that can feel like a lot when you're speaking another language, much less like saying, you know, inhale deeply, feel your heart and your chest expand, exhale, fold forward, let all your air out. You know, it's like, it's so simple to us in our native tongue, but we don't think about like how many words and things go into that when we're saying that. Does that kind of make sense? Does that resonate?
Absolutely. And this is, I really love that you brought this up, because I feel like in our native language, or if you're very fluent in a language, we're not always aware of how many words we actually use, and also how many ineffective or words that I call them filler words that really can be distracting in a yoga practice. And sometimes they are really used with the best intentions to motivate people or maybe even show compassion. But there's a lot of language that we use that can be very distractive when we practice. And it's words like, sorry is one that we use a lot. Or just like general comments like beautiful or amazing, let's go, and now. There's a lot of words that as native speakers or fluent speakers, we use in our daily conversation already, and then easily use it in our yoga class as well. And I think that if you're a little bit less fluent in the language, it's easier to learn to teach yoga effectively in another language because you haven't built up that familiarity with the language already. And you really start from zero, and it makes it a really good practice to start applying like Q&A formulas we use, for example. A very, very effective one is a Q&A formula to cue action, a transition, or an exit. And it's as simple as breath plus verb plus body, pronoun, body part, and then direction of movement. And it could be as simple as inhale, lift your left arm up to the ceiling, for example. And that's really all you need. It's all you need if you want to cue asana. Obviously, if you want to add more metaphors and hypothetical language and maybe add some visualizations, we look at that too. But the very basic asana cues are, I think, easiest to learn when you're not so fluent yet, because it means that you have to unlearn less.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of an interesting concept. Like sometimes we think that we need, you know, to be at a certain level of a language to be able to do certain things in it, but being able to learn something in a really like native way, I think is one of the best ways to learn something. So if you're learning the way that it would be said for the first time, and it's like, that's all you know, versus knowing a lot and then doing translation. Cause they think that sometimes that's when things like don't sound, I guess, as native to people when you're a second language speaker. It's like, because you know a whole bunch of things, but then you're translating in your head. I feel like this is something that I've had in Spanish. There's some things that I like just learned and I know what it means and I know how to use it. And it's like, that's very Spanish or it's very Mexican. But then there's other things where you know, I don't know exactly how a native speaker would say it. So I just use the words I know to translate it. And it's like, okay, that kind of, you know, majorly gives you away as like not being somebody who speaks this natively and that type of thing. So I really love that concept that you're talking about. And I think hopefully that's something that is encouraging to people where it's like, you know, you don't have to be fluent or advanced in another language to be able to move forward with learning to do something like teach in that language.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's really interesting because as we work with people from different places around the world and they have had their own education, in some places they learn English from a young age and in some places not at all. So we have really seen a lot of different ways of approaching the learning process, but also things that they've learned. And you can tell that when people have learned it from the textbooks or let's say they've learned it on the streets. But I really believe that the more you know, the more you have to unlearn to really make your classes not only effective, but also more accessible and inclusive, because there's so many terms that we use that we are not aware of, that maybe not received so well because of the associations and connotations we have in certain parts of the world. And more so since English, since we pay so much attention to inclusive language in the yoga class.
Yeah, absolutely. And so one of my questions for you, Annie, is that, you know, for a lot of the people listening, they are probably English, like native English speakers. And so I'm curious for those people, like, you know, why is this important? Why is this topic something that we really need to get out there? And how, as a native English speaker, can you help people who are maybe trying to teach in a second language?
Oh, this is a great question. So why it's important? Well, I think the way that we speak with each other and communicate each other, that is the way that we connect with people, right? And especially in a yoga class, we have so many ways to connect with each other. It can simply be like energy exchange. But I believe that during a class, we as teachers have the possibility to help people discover themselves and discover more about who they are and what they really want to do in life and what's going on in their mind. So many different concepts, right? So communication, I think, is really important to teach the philosophy and the concepts of yoga. And what's your second question? How to help teachers teach in a foreign language? Or
yeah, I guess how can we be...
What was the second question?
Yeah. And I love just what you said in terms of, like, you know, I feel like there's a lot of problems in the world and there's a lot of things that are not so great at the moment. And I feel like sometimes when we don't understand one another, if we don't understand our cultural differences, or, you know, maybe language, religion, it kind of brings this like disconnect. And I feel like being able to connect with the words we use is so important. And so I'm really aligned with that. And then the second part to that is, you know, say if somebody's listening and they're from the US and, you know, they're teaching yoga and they speak English and they're like, okay, well, I don't need a course in speaking English because I speak English natively. You know, how can us native English speakers be, I guess, like allies or supportive to the movement of helping other people learn languages and teach in their second language?
Right. I think patience is one thing, helping people to find their own words. I feel that a lot of native speakers, when they speak to people that speak their language as a second language, they finish their sentences. And obviously, this is not everyone, but this is what I often see. They finish other people's sentences. And I think, yeah, it speeds up the conversation. And sometimes people actually don't know the words that they want to use. But it also doesn't help people to develop their own vocabulary and find their own voice, because people always do it for them, right? So that's one thing. So maybe give people more time to actually find their voice, find their own vocabulary, their own way of expressing themselves. Feedback always helps, helping people maybe with pronunciation, because hard, especially for Spanish speakers or any speaker of a Latin language or even Asian languages. Vowels are very, very, very different and often do not exist in their language. So helping them with vowel pronunciation could really help to avoid confusion in certain situations. And I think as well, not making it a big deal, because a lot of non-native speakers, they're very embarrassed or very shy in the about the way that they speak, very embarrassed with their accents, very conscious and believe that a lot of people judge them for their pronunciation or their accent, but also mistakes that they make. So I would say encouragement and reassurance, showing compassion, being patient with people that are really trying to make an effort to make themselves understood in the language that is your own, and helping them where you can without finishing their sentences if they haven't asked for it.
Yeah, for sure. I've definitely had that happen to me. Sometimes I'm grateful because I don't have the words, and other times I'm like, oh, just let me try. Exactly. Yeah, definitely. Hear all of that. And I appreciate you sharing all of that, because I think that, you know, this is very important. And I think that the patience piece is huge, and just being compassionate. I think one thing for me that's been very helpful has been actually moving to another country where I don't speak the language natively, and then going through the process of learning that and having, you know, some people be like, quite honestly, like rude about it and not helpful and discouraging, and then having the majority of people be very helpful and patient and encouraging, and it can make all the difference. And I can very much relate to feeling nervous speaking in another language. I don't like making mistakes. I don't like the fact that I know I have an accent, all those things. Like, I don't love that, but it's just part of the reality, right? And there's nothing wrong with making mistakes, and there's nothing wrong with having an accent. You know, I have an accent in English, just like you do. And, you know, we all have accents. It's just, it sounds non-accented in our heads. That's the thing. And, we make mistakes in our native tongue too. I make mistakes in English all the time, yet I don't like beat myself up over them the way I do in Spanish. So I think that, yeah, this is all really, really great stuff, and makes me really excited for what you're doing and how you're really impacting people. So thank you for sharing all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really passionate about it. So I could speak about this forever and ever. And I think it's such an interesting concept now that I'm in Morocco at the moment, and I'm meeting a lot of people from different places. And I just see how much it's needed, not only in the yoga industry, but also in wellness, because as the borders are opening up again and more people start to travel and want to start their own international businesses or offer their services to people in other places because that's where they want to live or travel. It's just, to me, language and communication is not only important to connect, but also, like you said, really get to know different things about their culture, because if we can't speak as fluently or maybe haven't developed a certain type of vocabulary, there are certain things that you would never know about otherwise. And I think it really helps us to be compassionate with people and their cultures and understand each other better and deal with all of that in a very respectful way.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree with that. And so I'm curious, what are your recommendations for someone who's teaching a second language to help build their confidence and hone their language? I know you mentioned before that that's a big part of the program, but what are some of your top, you know, tips or recommendations for that?
Right. Very first thing, and that's something I say always, and I think I should make that like the quote on our website, but a foreign accent is a sign of bravery, and really just accepting that whatever your first language is, and even in English, there are so many different accents. And if your first language is foreign, I think it really shows that you've got the courage and the willingness or the determination to learn another language and make yourself understood. And that's something that we should acknowledge, but also just be really, really proud of. So foreign accent is a sign of bravery. Embrace that. Second thing take it one step at a time, because I feel that many people learning a foreign language, and especially when they want to start teaching yoga in a foreign language, they want to know everything at the same time. And you can only learn so much in a period of time. So I would say focus on the things that you already teach, that you already feel confident in, and learn those things first. So, well, actually, a step before that is understanding your teacher's voice. And the way that I explain it, and I don't believe that everyone, we can box certain people in certain teaching styles, but we have people that naturally speak more about anatomy or naturally really like to bring more spiritual elements into their classes, or naturally really like to be very motivational and supportive. So I would say, analyze the language that you naturally use a lot and work from there. So if you use a lot of adjectives in your speech, or if you use a lot of metaphors in your speech, learn that type of language first so that you can develop your authentic voice in that foreign language too, so that you feel like I actually use the same words and phrases and expressions that I use in, let's say, if you teach in Spanish and now use in English as well. And from there, one step at a time. And I would say focus first on body parts, verbs, and movement of directions. Directions of movement. And from there, build on your vocabulary gradually. And be very patient with yourself as well, because learning a language is not something you do overnight. And really, it's a process of years and years. And I believe that even if you're fluent, there's new things that you learn every day.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you for sharing all of that. Yeah. One thing that really stood out for me when I took that Spanish yoga course was, because I've already been teaching for, 7 years, I guess 6 years at the time of taking the course, was just how slow I was. And I felt like that was, a thing that was frustrating for me. And I kept trying to talk faster and faster and be more fluid with it. And I feel like coming back to that one step at a time, I can't expect to be able to do a skill that I've been doing in English for 6 years that comes very naturally to me in another language the exact same way, right? Like, it's kind of relearning the whole process. So it's going back to sort of being like a baby yoga teacher and being like, okay, I really need to think about what's happening here, what I want them to do, think about the words a little bit more. But yeah, I really love everything that you talked about there. And hopefully this is helpful for people and hopefully gives them some confidence to maybe learn a second language if English is your first, or maybe, if English is your second language, but you've been nervous to teach, just getting out there and starting to become more confident and hone that language and just start practicing, because we all have to start from somewhere, right? It's like nobody starts from being amazing or perfect at this.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And I think, we do a teacher training, and that's really when it starts. And like you said, if you do your teacher training in English first and at your first language, that's something that we need to learn from zero as well. Because like we spoke about before, the type of language and the way that you speak and cueing is a skill that you don't really use in your daily basis. So if you're not a fitness professional or whatever, do something in that field, or maybe dance teacher, that type of language is not something you already are used to. So in your first language is something that you need to embody, and then imagine doing that in another language, having to, like you said, the whole process starts over, but it takes even longer because you're doing it in a language that's not your own as well. So it's two different things that you're training at the same time.
Hey, yoga teachers. We're just taking a quick break from the podcast to talk about Coach Pals. Coach Pals is a wellness professional network. And why would we be interested in networking? Well, networking adds an increasing visibility to your wellness business. You're not only connecting to people in your network, but with professionals and clients in their network too. This will naturally materialize on amazing opportunities, from referrals, partnerships, collaboration, and job offers, to new clients and requests for your services or products. Referrals work both ways.
It's also extremely helpful to have a network of professionals you trust for your own clients when they need a provider for a service that you don't offer. This saves them time and energy and makes you look savvy. So, why am I telling you this? Because Coach Pals does all of this, and they do it for people in the wellness industry like us yoga teachers. I've already created my profile on Coach Pals, and I'm super excited to start seeing more and more yoga teachers over there. So if you'd like to join me over at Coach Pals, head on over to coachpals.com to get started today. You can use the code MBOMPALS to get 3 months free off your professional membership. Once you're there and you've got your profile started, make sure you go and connect with me. I'm Amanda Kingsmith. Once again, coachpals.com. All right, now back to the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that. And then I'm curious if we can talk a little bit more generally. I know that you are working a ton with yoga teachers. Do you have some top tips for yoga teachers just in general when it comes to building confidence, finding their voice, business skills, all of that type of stuff?
One thing that I see a lot with the teachers that I work with is they take course after course after course, but they never really practice what they've learned. And there's this really beautiful phrase in The Tree of Yoga by Iyengar. And he says that knowledge doesn't mean anything without practicing it. And I read that a few years ago and I thought that really resonated with me at that time. And I was practicing, but I felt like definitely could do more. And I share it with my students all the time. And I feel like a lot of people need to hear that. Or maybe even acknowledge that to themselves. And from there, build the confidence, actually get out there and do it. And it's very easy to say, well, just do it. Just get out there and find these teaching opportunities and throw yourself in there. But I think remembering that your knowledge means so much more if you actually know how to use it. And you will know how to use it if you practice it and let go of the fear of making mistakes, let go of the fear of being judged. People don't come to your yoga classes to judge you. They really come there to practice and to have someone hold space for them. So I would say that, yeah, sorry, just repeating myself.
No, that was a great answer. And I feel really aligned with that and definitely agree. I think that it can be so hard when you start out to kind of know, I guess, like when you're ready, you could say, but I feel like we're never really going to feel ready to do something that we've never done before, right? Like it's always going to feel uncomfortable. I think that that's just like the fact of the matter with that. And I think you're right. Like, you know, I've seen this too, you know, teachers just doing course after course after course after course. And it's like, oh, you know, I don't like know enough yet to start offering this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you do know enough. You've known enough for ages and you just kind of have to jump in. And I think some of the biggest learning actually comes from being in the space with your students, because your students are going to be your biggest teachers, right? And that's everything from, you know, finding your voice to honing your language to building your business. All of those different things are going to come with practice. So I think that that's a really, really important one to remember. And yeah, at some point we just have to dive in and just knowing that it's going to be uncomfortable, but you only have to do it like the first time once. And after that, it gets easier and easier. And I know for me, my first yoga class was actually, I was working at Lululemon at the time and we would have staff meetings like once a month. And so we usually did some sort of like a sweaty practice in the morning. And so when I got back from my teacher training, they were like, do you want to teach like the sweaty practice for the staff meeting? And I was like, no, I do not want to do that. But then I was like, yes, of course I want to do this. It's like the perfect environment, right? It's, you know, there's not a lot on the line. It's people that I'm comfortable with. It's my friends. I know that they're going to like cheer me on regardless of if the class is terrible and I stumble over my words. And then I'm going to get some really good feedback from them, which is going to be really great. And I'm going to get feedback in a way that I'm not going to get in like a public class. And so I did it. And I feel like that was probably the scariest yoga class I ever taught. But then I was like, oh, I did it and I can do this again. So yeah, you just kind of have to, yeah, jump in with it. So thanks for sharing that. And then I'm curious for you, you've created this, you know, amazing business. What are some of the top business lessons that you've learned through your business?
Great question. I was at a business retreat last week, and I've been reflecting a lot on the things that I've done in the last 3 or 4 years now, and where I want to go with things. And I feel that there's a lot of people that suffer from imposter syndrome. They've got a dream, they've got a vision, they do know where they want to go, but they feel like, oh, I'm not capable, or I'm not enough, or I don't know enough, or I don't have enough experience. And I feel that one of the biggest things that really helped me, or like mindset shift, was we don't have to have all the answers, and you only need to be one or two steps, or maybe two or three steps ahead of the people that you want to serve. Not only because it will help you to really connect with them on a deeper level, because you're not that far apart from each other, send each other's language and each other's challenges and where you really are at, but it also helps you to stay motivated to keep developing yourself, because you will learn things through them that you then can learn or research and dive into further or deeper. So I think it's a really inspiring way to keep yourself motivated in the process. And another lesson is that, and this really speaks to people working with the niche, that it's okay to make changes. Because I think that a lot of the time people are, first of all, very afraid to choose a niche or to choose a certain group of people to work with. And I actually don't really like to call it a niche. I would rather say an ideal client. Because it feels like you're limiting yourself to a certain group of people. And that once you choose that certain group of people, that you can't actually make any changes, or you will always have to work with the same group of people. And I think one of the things I learned is that that's not necessarily true. And you can make changes as you grow, as you develop, and as you evolve in your business. And from there, take your people, the people that you've been working with so far, on a journey as well. So number one, it's okay to be only two steps ahead. And number two, it's okay to make changes along the journey.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing both of those. I feel like number one really relates to that. Like, you know, you just kind of have to dive in and start teaching. And I think that we can really get in our heads like, oh, you know, I'm not like an expert or a master at this. And, you know, the only way to become that is to start teaching and to just know that you have something valuable to share with the people coming to your classes, because they're, you know, a bit behind in their yoga journey from where you are. And that was something that was very real for me. I mean, I started this podcast and my business when I had only been teaching for like, I don't know, like 6 months or something like that. And, you know, I started learning from people ahead of me and teaching people who are behind me. And that's just continuing to evolve as I've become more experienced. And I think that that's a beautiful reminder. So yeah, thanks for sharing that. I'm curious, is there anything else you want to share today, you know, around the importance of language learning, how people can get started with their yoga journey in a second language, anything else you've learned in your along the way, anything like that?
Yeah, I could share so many things. It's like I said, something I'm really passionate about. I feel that, wow, because, you know, it really depends on the person. And I think everyone's journey is so personal. And a lot of that has to do with who you teach, where you want to teach, the type of classes that you want to teach. So maybe for your audience, if they want to travel and if they want to spread, because really what I like about this is that if we all teach in English and if we can teach in other languages as too, and I'm behind the scenes, I'm translating the courses so that we can learn to do it in Spanish or French, Italian. But I feel like the more languages we can teach, the more we can practice and share yoga in the rest of the world and make it accessible and available to communities that otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to practice, because there's still a lot of communities around the world and even countries where yoga isn't as popular or hasn't been discovered, or they know about it but they have all these limiting beliefs or myths around them that like the basic things, like you need to be flexible, or it's only for people, or you can't do it when you have a certain religion or things around that. And I think that if we learn how to teach yoga in more and different languages, it will become easier to spread it with people all over the world, and just share the practices, the philosophy, and obviously the benefits and the way that it can improve our lives altogether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I think that's just really amazing. And I feel, like I've said before, super aligned with this mission and philosophy. And I think just having traveled so much, I feel like language is such a big part of that. And being able to connect with somebody just allows us to understand them, their culture a little bit better. I think it takes some of the fear away of being like different from somebody. And I feel like, I've been saying this for years, probably since I started practicing yoga, like I think if everyone in the world practiced yoga, the world would be a much more peaceful, beautiful place. And I think that being able to teach in more than one language and connect people through language and through yoga is, you know, the first step in having everyone on the planet be a little bit more mindful and, you know, feeling better in their bodies and, you know, mind, spirit, emotional, all that type of thing. So really, really grateful for the work that you're doing and really stoked to have you on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really, really grateful too. And I'm very grateful. And I have so much gratitude for everything that you do, for everything that you share, and all the amazing people that you have on your podcast, because it's just so inspiring. And I love that we can connect this way. You know, you're in Mexico, I'm in Morocco right now. We're just speaking over Zoom and connecting over all the beautiful things yoga has to offer and the way that we can connect and spread yoga in the rest of the world. So thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. And I'm curious, if people want to follow along with you, learn more about your business, where can they go to find all of that, Annie?
Absolutely. So basically, if you type in Enga Unite, so E-N-J-G-A, E-N for English and G-A for yoga, it's as simple as that. Enga Unite on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and Facebook. We've got a Facebook group called the Teach Yoga in English Facebook group, a support group for people that want to learn how to teach yoga in English. But we have a lot of English natives in there as well, helping our community out with certain expressions or phrases that they want to use in their classes. So Facebook group, Teach Yoga in English support group, and the rest of it is all Enga Unite, very easy to find.
Amazing. I'll make sure there's links for all of that in the show notes so people can connect with you. And yeah, thanks again for your time today. This has been really great.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And if anyone wants to know about their teaching style or their voice, the teaching's voice style, we've got a really fun quiz. And you can find that as well in the link in my bio on Instagram or on the website. It's just a fun way to find out more about where to start, really, if you want to learn English for yoga, or even in another language, where to start to really find the vocabulary that suits your style already and develop your voice in a more authentic way than just learning all the general things that you need to know.
Cool. That sounds awesome. Cool. Thanks for sharing that. And thanks for your time today, Annie. This has been fun.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to connecting with you more.
All right, friends, I hope that you enjoyed that episode of the podcast with Annie Dunhoff. If you're feeling inspired to go maybe learn a little bit more about her business, support her business, maybe you're interested in learning another language or learning to teach yoga in a second language, or maybe you're wanting to improve your English and start teaching yoga there, you know, lots of resources and options. So make sure you go check that out, follow along with what she's up to. As well as, I wanted to give a little thank you to Offering Tree for supporting this episode. You guys make sure you go give them some love, offeringtree.com/MBOM to get your discount. And if you're a yoga studio owner or you know a yoga studio owner, make sure you go share that and check them out. And of course, thank you for listening to this episode of the show. I couldn't do without you. So I'm so glad you're here, and I will see you next week. All right. Bye for now. Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode of the podcast. To find links, notes, resources, and everything mentioned in today and all episodes of the show, you can head on over to mbomyoga.com. You can find the podcast and myself on Facebook and social media at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And I would love for you to join the private Facebook community, Yoga Business Badasses. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please make sure you reach out to me at info@mbomyoga.com. And last of all, if you enjoyed this episode of the show, please make sure you hit subscribe and leave a review for the podcast. It would mean the world. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.